Old Down Under. Turn this banger up. Not a pom, judging Aussie tunes. Aussie music, mate. Alternative Down Under. Alternative Down Under.
Hello and welcome. Welcome back. It's 2026 and this is episode 31 of Alt Down Under. Luke Scanlon here with you once again. Another year for Alt Down Under and with it, another big interview. On this one, our first one for 2026, we are speaking with Maisie Everett, lead singer of the Bel Air Lip Bombs. What were the conversations like as a band prior to putting this record together? Because was there that pressure in the back of your head about, fuck, we need to really nail this?
Yeah, like a little bit. And I think like every band or artist would have that with their second album.
The hat that you have in the video and on the album cover, is there a story behind the hat? Or was it pure just, I like the hat, it's in?
So I just like literally grabbed like a duffel bag and just like threw a bunch of clothes in it. I think the hat was like on the couch or something, so I just grabbed it. Like, Don't Let Them Tell You It's Fair was one of the first songs that we wrote for the record. Yeah, when I started writing the lyrics for the song, I guess like the song is about like, you know, believing in yourself. Felt very fitting, like you have to make your own luck.
The big man himself, Jack White, have you ever spoken to him?
The label like organized for us to do like a little meet and greet, and it was literally like, it was like 5 minutes before he was about to go on stage. It was like kind of like rushed and like a little bit awkward, but he was very lovely.
Alternative Down Under.
Oh man, so excited to bring you this chat and welcome back to Old Down Under. 2026 is here and it's alive. What is going on? I hope everyone's had a great start to the year so far. Man, what a big year ahead we have. It's just music coming out of our ears everywhere. Plus, in other news, it's a World Cup year. So if anyone is a football fan, soccer fan, mate, then what a time to be alive. It's so good. And this episode with the Bel Air Lip Bombs, my lord. Their second album, again, came out not too long before Christmas. And geez, it has been on repeat. Let me tell you, Jesus, man, I've been all over it. And as I mentioned in the interview, it's at the point now where it is on repeat so much so that I know exactly what is coming up for the next track. You know, when you're like, okay, that one's ending. I know what the opening riff is. I know what the opening drum beat is on the next track. It is fully embedded into my soul. It is such a good album. So to lock this chat in with Maisie and hear all about the making of the album has filled me with joy in these early stages of the new year. But yeah, we get into a chat about moving over and working with Third Man Records. Of course, Jack White's label. A little story about meeting the great man backstage, which is pretty funny. Plus, Maisie also gets into creating your own luck. A conversation that she had with a fellow artist about really unlocking your true potential in the music biz. Because it is a tough industry. We've heard that a lot on this show. A lot of artists open up about that, about the grind, how tough it can be. But in order to open up those doors, those avenues, reach new fans, it is about the hard graft, putting the miles in, putting the hours in. So yeah, an amazing story there. And I find out about the hat. The hat, I hear you say. That is the hat that Maisie wears on the cover of Again. You will find out how that hat managed to play such a starring role on the album front cover, plus in one of their music videos as well. All of that coming up very shortly.
Alternative Down Under.
So, 2026, it kicked off yet again, another New Year's Day with a hangover, because on New Year's Eve, I was at New Year's at the Bowl, where Joy Crooks was singing. Finally got to see Joy live after she came on Alt Down Under a couple of episodes back. Oh man, what an absolute treat that was. And down at Sydney Meyer Music Bowl in Melbourne, I was going into it a bit like, what's the vibe going to be? Different a couple of stages there as well, which I'd not experienced before at that venue. And I have to say, I reckon they nailed it. There was a slight bit of sound bleeding slightly, which is pretty hard to avoid in those outdoor arenas. But, oh man, what a way to see the new year in. Like, Berlioz was down there as well, and Confidence Man just delivered a real slice of Confidence Man silliness. It's just, I don't know how those guys do it. they must be the fittest performers out there. It's just incredible. The moves that they have as well, it's like, it's kind of moves that you do in the kitchen when no one else is watching. Dance like no one's watching, yeah. But that is exactly what they do, and it's just such a fuck it attitude. It's so fun. And so yeah, I had that, and then who else did I see? Carl Cox. I haven't seen him in years, not since my days back in London, and yeah, great man. It was just such a great way to see New Year in. And Sydney Meyer with the City backdrop behind you there is just great. And of course, bringing us firmly into 2026 and firmly into the morning after hangovers was Underworld. And wow, I mean, just seeing Born Slippy, which is such an iconic song, particularly coming from the UK and obviously Trainspotting coming out 2 years after I was born and just forever being within the pop culture fabric of the country, and seeing that song live is just genuinely, even talking about it now, I've got goosebumps, which is amazing. Just magical. It was great. It was pure love down there that evening. A nice 5 a.m. finish for me, which was lovely. So yeah, I've actually probably started the year off feeling about 10 years older than I actually am.
Alternative Down Under.
Okay, I wanted to keep things pretty brief as we get into this episode, because we did have a good old natter, did Maisie and I. Maisie Everett, the lead singer of the Bel Air Lip Bombs. I am so much of a fan. I've brought a t-shirt of theirs. I'm listening to them every day, very much on high rotation. I reckon even being months off Spotify on Wrapped for 2026, guarantee you Bel Air Lip Bombs might be top artist, if not in the top three. You've heard it here first, kids. But yeah, this conversation is one that has been on the radar for a long time. We've been trying to navigate this, lock in a time for genuinely months. So I'm so pleased we finally got it in the can. And this is a singer and a band that I think are really going to make 2026 their own. An Australian tour, a North America tour. It's all there right for them to go and attack it and make 2026 a huge year. All right, let's have it then. This is conversation for episode 31 of Alt Down Under. Maisie Everett, lead singer of the Bel Air Lip Bombs. Maisie, welcome to Alt Down Under. Thank you for joining the show. How are we doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Honestly, I've been very pumped to do this interview, because so pumped, in fact, that I brought a Bel Air Lip Bombs t-shirt not that long ago.
Are you wearing it?
Not currently. I genuinely wore it yesterday.
Which
and
one?
I wore it to work. The one... Hold on.
He's going to get it.
It is in here somewhere. I might have put it... Oh, no, it's in here. Yeah, I've had to get it out of the laundry basket.
That one? Oh, nice. That's my favourite one.
It's a pretty cool one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got it from Sound Merch. Support your local record store. Because mm-hmm. You guys played there not that long ago, right?
Yeah, we played there on the day that... the night the album came out.
That's right, yeah. Because I did go down to try and get in there. No chance. Like, there was too much of a queue outside. Yeah, and I was like, you know when you go, I reckon I've nailed this and I've got down there really early?
Yeah.
Definitely
fucked
haven't.
Damn.
Yeah, absolutely fucked it. But yeah, before we come on to what is an amazing album with Again, I wanted to like go back a little bit in time, just because I know you guys are from Frankston, and around Christmas time, I met up with my mate who was also from Frankston, and I messaged him and I was like, can you give me some like intel as to what it was like growing up in Frankston?
Oh my God.
I went and met him for a coffee at Common Folk.
Oh yeah.
Have you been there before?
Uh-huh.
Quite a good coffee. But it kind of, the Pulp fan within me was like, why did you not call it Common People? That's annoying.
Yeah, true. I haven't thought about that before. Missed opportunity.
Oh no, that's now going to be in your head every time you go. So he said, mention Oliver's Hill.
Oh yeah.
What is Oliver's Hill? Is that a little hangout? Kind
of, yeah, it's like, it's basically this, it's a hill, obviously. But it's like, it's right on the beach, and it's like there's the highway like sort of goes down it. But there's like a bunch of little like, I don't know how to describe it, like staircases that like go from like down like the beach, like the bottom up to like, I guess like all the streets at the top of the hill. And like, yeah, there's some, it's kind of like where you go when you're like 16 and you're like leaving a party, and then you go to like smoke a joint or something at the top of the hill.
Yeah, no, sneak a few beers. Yeah. Cool. And the other thing, he was like, ask about Knights at the Deck, Flanagan's, and Century 21. Did you go to any of these places?
Well, I was actually talking about the Deck with my friend the other day, who's not from Frankston, because the Deck is, I don't know if it's still, it's like a bar slash like club, I guess. I've never been though, because I don't know if it's still like this, but it's, when I was living in Frankston, it was, I think, yeah, it was like 23 or like 25 plus, like you could only get it if you were older.
Oh, really?
Which is like, so obviously like everywhere else in Australia, you only have to be 18. So I could never go because I was, even when I turned 18, I could never go because I still wasn't old enough. And then
still fuming.
Flanagan's is another, is like, I think it's like an Irish pub. They're pretty dingy, the pubs in Frankston. There's a couple of good ones now. They've opened up some like cool, like the younger demographic, but it's not the best place to go out.
I need to go down. I need to experience the nightlife. I haven't been, I literally have been to common people. Common people, fuck, I've done it again. Common folk.
Only good coffee in Frankston is from common people, common folk.
And I wanted to also ask you about Singing Bird Studio, because that's where you guys kind of cut your teeth, mm-hmm. right? That's where the early days of the band. Tell me a bit about that and how important that was, because that must have been like pretty vital for you guys as a band to have that space.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's my, I used to, when I was a teenager, I worked at a guitar shop in Frankston and I met my friend Stu there, and he went on to open up Singing Bird in like 2015. And that's when I was like starting to like think about like starting a band, blah, blah, blah. And then when we started the band, it was only like a rehearsal space. Like it was just like a rehearsal space. There wasn't, they didn't do gigs or anything like that. So when the band started, we just wrote songs and practiced there. And then they started like the recording studio pretty shortly after. And that's where we recorded like the first EPs. And then a couple of years after that, that's when they started like doing gigs. We played a bunch of gigs in the first like couple of years of being a band down there. And we like even like ran a couple of gigs there and like had friends' bands play. And yeah, it was just like, I don't know, like we met so many people, and it's obviously still going. We don't rehearse down there as much anymore because we're all living up in Melbourne, but it's such, like, I feel like we're very like lucky to have had that place. And like Stu, my friend who runs it, he like managed the band for the first few years. I don't know, having that just sort of pushed us to like really work hard, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's probably quite nice to have that like as a emblematic space for the early days of the band as well.
Exactly.
It must be really nice to have that. And one thing, like, because I've been a fan of your music for a long time, and then in preparation for having a chat with you today, I like went and revisited like your really, really early stuff. I kind of, like, part of me kind of forgot how like in your face some of those tracks like Get Smart and Figure It Out are, and I was like, fucking hell, yeah, I kind of forgot like how a lot heavier the Bel Air Lip Bombs were back in the earlier days. You've been on a pretty interesting stylistic journey, really.
I had that same thought the other day, because I'm kind of the same. I forget that those songs exist a lot of the time. I mean, I don't know, I don't think there was like a reason why we got less heavy as the years went on, but I think that's just the way it happened. But yeah, I don't know. I guess like, I think the reason why the songs were more sort of heavy and punky is probably just because that's what we were listening to when we were a bit younger.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Just pure anger at not being allowed into the Deck.
Yeah, exactly.
just kicking off.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, it's interesting because when I was listening to those earlier songs, I did want to ask you in terms of like, writing again or just writing any new music, do you ever go back to your earlier stuff almost as a point of reference when you're putting new stuff together, or is it more like you're in the moment right then and there and that's where those new songs take direction from?
Definitely just being in the moment. I don't think we've ever done that, like gone back to, like maybe when we were recording again we would reference like Lush Life like maybe once or twice, but definitely not. Yeah, it's pretty much out of sight, out of mind with those first EPs. But like, I mean, and we don't, like, that's the thing, we don't play those songs live anymore either. But I don't know. I've still got, they still have a place in my heart.
Yo, yeah, big time. Yeah, definitely. Well, they're the songs that literally, just because chronologically they put you on the map.
Exactly. It's like,
that's just how it is. So yeah. That's cool. Let's talk about Again Then, because, mate, honestly, what an album.
Like, thank you.
Honestly, congratulations. Such a good album. Because, yeah, I was a big fan of Lush Life. And then, where was I in the world? I was doing a bit of traveling when that album came out. I literally, like, I had a gap in my visas, so I literally, like, did a mental global trip.
Sick.
Within about 6 months.
Wow.
And, like, got a really manly injury and broke my pinky. I had to go back to the UK.
Oh my God.
Then ended up back in Melbourne. But yeah, so I was kind of, like, really, like, a lot of anticipation for this new record. And I wanted to ask you about this as well, because a lot of bands kind of, you know, this whole like second album syndrome mm-hmm. thing, but like obviously you guys have just gone fuck you to the second album syndrome and smashed it. What were the conversations like as a band prior to putting this record together? Because was there that pressure in the back of your head about, fuck, we need to really nail this?
Yeah, like a little bit. And I think like every band or artist would have that with their second album, especially because for us and probably a lot of other people, the first record, when we were writing it, we didn't have like a label or like anyone like expecting it from us. So we had like an infinite amount of time to write it. And then obviously we got signed to Third Man, and we had, you know, things like deadlines and other people's opinions on the music, which, yeah, was all like new to us. The deadline stuff was like a big challenge for us. And I think now that we've done it once, it'll be easier the next time we do it. But we did like push back the deadline multiple
good on
times.
You.
Because
you don't want to rush it, right?
You don't want to rush it, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, and it's like the, you know, the label doesn't want you to rush it either.
Mm.
Like, it's in everyone's best interest for it to be as good as it could be, I guess. That being said, like, came out two years after Lush Life did. It was like a couple of years of sort of like writing bits and bobs. And then it was like the year leading up to the release, preparing to record and recording
sure.
and everything like that.
Yeah. What's the experience being like signing with Third Man? Because obviously the big man himself, Jack White, have you ever spoken to him? Has there ever been any correspondence between you guys at all?
We met him. So we met him when he played in Melbourne at... When was it?
Did he play at the Corner? Not that.
Yeah,
like,
he played at the
within
Corner.
Within the last like, year or so, maybe.
Yeah. And he also played at the Forum, like in the same weekend or something.
Yeah, right.
And we saw him at the Forum. The label, like, organised for us to go into his green room and to, like, meet, do, like, a little meet and greet.
Yeah.
And it was literally, like, 5 minutes before he was about to go on stage. So it was like kind of like rushed and like a little bit awkward, but he was very lovely. It was pretty surreal to meet him. The Third Man team is like pretty big.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So all the people that we work with are like amazing.
Yeah.
And I think Jack has more to do with like the, I guess like the kind of like visual and like aesthetic side of the label, as opposed to, what do you call it? Like the A&R, is that the word?
Yeah, A&R side of stuff, yeah. But yeah, I actually just remember then, do you remember there was a video going around of Jack? I think I don't know if it was a Grammy, but he made an amazing speech about like being young and going out and exploring music. And I was like, man, like I think that must
such
have like struck a chord with you as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I obviously knew who he was and the White Stripes and everything before we signed to them, but it wasn't until after that I like followed him on Instagram and like really like kind of like, I don't know, got to know his kind of like personality just like literally through social media.
Mm.
And he's like very like political in like on the good side of politics, which is like amazing. And it's, I don't know, I think it's nice for us to be a part of Third Man and have like this kind of like values be aligned with the people that are running Third Man as well, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's a big thing for sure. Yeah. I also wanted to chat to you about Again and the change up, because there's definitely been a progression in your sound. I think like things, I don't know if polished is the right word, but it sounds a bit more polished. And I think also your vocals have like leveled up as well. Like, if you listen to first and second album, there's a change there as well. Was that something you were wanting to do yourself, or was that like you got feedback from someone, or like how did you arrive at that? Because it does, there is quite a difference there, I reckon.
Yeah, it was pretty like conscious. I think like it started from after we released Lush Life. I really struggled like trying to sing the songs live.
Right, okay.
I don't know if it was like more rushed when we recorded it or something, but I think I got into this like weird like headspace where I like just sang really weirdly, or like really like not how I would normally sing on Lush Life. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but when I listen back to it, I'm like, that's so weird. Like, why did I sing like that?
That must be quite a weird thing to realize about something that you've created, gone, that's not me.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And like, especially like songs like Look the Part, like that's like a big one where I listen to the recording and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why am I singing like that? And I honestly, like, I can't listen to it because I'm like, that just sounds like so weird.
That's pretty interesting because that's probably one of your most loved tracks, I reckon, by fans.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I definitely like in the sort of pre-production with Again made more of like a conscious decision to be like, okay, when I record vocals for this album, I'm going to think about it more and like really sing, you know, think about like how I want to sing on each song and even like each like phrase, like I guess I like planned it a bit more.
Yeah, sure.
And I feel like the way that I sing on Again is more how I sing like when we're playing live. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, yeah, got you. It's interesting you say about the live thing. Like, I hadn't even considered that. The style from the first album, the way in which you sing on that one, I could, because it's obviously more like strenuous, I guess, just on your vocal cords. Yeah. Like, it would probably, and the amount of touring you've got coming up, like, I can see why you go, actually, I should probably prepare for this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that's a bit, yeah, that's an interesting take. One track I did want to chat to you about, purely because I think it's got the best motherfucker in a song ever.
Yeah.
And it just brings me so much joy is on Hey You, and I'm like, when you do the motherfucker just say what you mean, I'm like, yes. I don't know why, it just brings me so much joy. I'm like, that is such a good way of singing that. I'm like, yeah, what a good way to lean into it. I think it's because it's so like you're singing it so beautifully, and it's just the word motherfucker. Yeah. And I'm like, go on, Maisie.
Wow, I'm flattered.
Absolutely love that. Also, I saw part of a clip you were chatting about, Don't Let Them Tell You It's Fair, and a conversation you had with a friend that was kind of like the starting block of that track. So I just wanted to ask you about that chat that you had with the friend, creating your own luck.
Yeah, well, the friend in question is Alex Leahy. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's an amazing musician, also from Melbourne. You should check out her music. It's great. I can't remember how we connected. It was a few years ago. I think she reached out and just said that she really liked the music. And I was like, obviously a fan of hers. She's like a few years older than me. So we met up for coffee one day just so I could kind of like pick her brain about like the music. Cause it was like right at the beginning, like I think it was like right before Lush Life. It was actually before Lush Life came out, I think. I was like asking her so many questions about like the industry, and I just like had no idea what was going on. And I can't remember what the context was, but she said to me that you have to make your own luck, meaning like you have to work hard and the opportunities will come, you know. But I don't know, it just like stuck with me. And we had like Don't Let Them Tell You It's Fair was one of the first songs that we wrote for the record. And I think we'd started writing it like just after Lush Life came out, so around that time. Yeah, when I started writing the lyrics for the song, I guess like the song is about like, you know, believing in yourself. Felt very fitting, like you have to make your own luck.
It's an absolute banger of a tune. I love it. I did also want to ask you, because I love the video for that, because it's just like shots of down on the beach in Melbourne, which is like, yeah, I reckon maybe if I am kicked out of the country later on this year because of my visa, I'll be watching that just like a singular tear rolling down the cheek, like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
I need to ask you, most important question of the interview, the hat. The hat that you have in the video and on the album cover. Yeah. Is there a story behind the hat, or is it pure just, I like the hat, it's in?
There's a story. It's basically my housemate's hat. And it's my good friend Joey / housemate. He moved in to my house at the start of the year, and then I think it was like a couple of months later that that we've shot that film clip, or actually shot the album cover came first. I don't know why. I think we, when we did the shoot for the album cover, all we knew was that we wanted to do it down at this beach. We didn't have like outfits or anything. So I just like literally grabbed like a duffel bag and just like threw a bunch of clothes in it. And for some, I think the hat was like on the couch or something. So I just grabbed it. I think there's like hundreds of photos from that photo shoot, from the album shoot. And I was only wearing the hat for a few of them. And that's the one that we used. And then, yeah, it kind of became like this like sort of like motif, I guess. So we used it again in the film clip. And my housemate, Joey, is never going to let me live it down. I think he wants royalties or something.
It's great. Well, I'm like, surely you need to make your own version of the hat and sell it as merch.
I actually had a dream that we did that. You just reminded me.
You've got to. It just has to happen. Yeah. Because I think more so for you, it would be fucking funny just coming out on stage and there's a sea of the
hats. Sea of the hats. Like, I know.
You'll be like, what is going on? Yeah. It's just like all your minions in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty scary but amazing.
That'd be so cool. Another track I wanted to ask you about is Cinema, because one of my favourite tracks on the album. And that track nearly didn't happen. Is that right?
Yeah, it was just one of those songs that took ages to write. Like, we had the verse written like a year and a half before recording. And we kept coming back to it, trying to write a chorus, and it just like wasn't happening. Every chorus just that we would write for, it just like felt like it was like just falling flat next to the verse. And then it wasn't until, it was literally like a week before we went into the studio to record it. We had like a pre-production rehearsal with our producer, just to kind of go through all the songs and make sure everything's sort of ready to go. And we still didn't have the chorus for Cinema. And we were like pulling our hair out, like trying to figure something out. And then it just happened, like literally like a week before. Mike like played those like chords for the chorus, and I was like, "Yep, that's sweet. Let's do it." And we were still pretty unsure about it when we were recording it, and it took like a whole day to like really like iron it out. But yeah, I think it, and then it was like another like couple of months after that, like trying to actually write like the vocal melody for it. Yeah, it's a fun song. I think it's Jimmy, our bassist, I think it's his favorite song.
Yes, it's got a lovely little groove to it.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see why a bassist would like that as a song to play. Definitely.
Exactly.
Such a tune. Yeah, yeah, man. I think also for me on the record, like a few tracks, Price of a Man, Burning Up and Smiling, they're like three tracks I think that really show how you guys have, well, A, got confidence moving forward, but B, are just not afraid to try new stuff. Because like we said earlier in the chat, like if you compare that to your really earlier stuff, you'll probably, if you told your younger self you'd make three tracks like that, you'd probably be going, oh, okay,
yeah
that's so interesting.
True. Yeah.
But yeah, I just love that you've kind of, because you've got those big, heavier, like bigger energy tracks on the record, but having those in there, I think, just really show how you guys have come on as a band.
Yeah, for sure. I think I agree. I mean, it's, especially Burning Up, that was like the first time we've ever done anything like that. Burning Up's a funny one. Like that was another song that fucking took, like that started off as like a rock song. And
oh, really? That's interesting.
We actually recorded it. Like there is an original version of that song. It was like, it just didn't sound good. So we, did it again, like on the piano. And I still, well, I don't know, when I listen to Burning Up, I'm like, I still, like, don't love this. I think, like, because it was our first time recording, doing a song like that, a piano ballad, it was, like, new territory for us. I think, like, listening to it, I'm like, there's a lot of things that I feel like I could learn from and, like, do differently if we were ever to do a song like that again. I'm still glad it's on the record, and it's, like, we've played it live a couple of times now, which has been really cool.
I don't think there is a bad track on there. Like, often you listen to an album, and I'm also amazed at the point where, I don't know if you've ever had this, where you listen to an album so much like cover to cover, a song ends and I start humming the next song before it's even on. Like I'm at that level of how much I honestly have abused that album.
Wow.
I've listened to it an insane amount. And when I was at Meredith, like waking up in my tent in the morning, that was like my little reset before I crawled out of my tent, like dying. And I'd just lie there and listen to the album.
That's so sick. I love that. Yeah.
Just on that as well, I wanted to ask you in terms of like, because you can talk and you can measure success in terms of streams and sales and all that stuff. But I wanted to ask you in terms of success and fans' connection to your music. Like, what does that look like for you? Is it in terms of like playing live and you just see them going for it? Or is it like you would prefer someone having a deeper connection to your songs? Where do you think success lies for you in terms of the fans' reaction?
I think just like, I've always like kind of like felt like you've succeeded as a musician if people just like remember your songs, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know, there's you know, there's music that I listen to that I just listen to once and I don't think about the song again, or I kind of like listen to it like passively, I guess. I think when the music connects with people that they like are like want to know like about the band, or they like it's like enough for them to like want to come to a show to see us, I feel like that's like success to me. Is, I don't know, just like the music connecting with people. To be honest, just like people listening to our music is like, I mean, that's really just like the brunt of it. People listening to it and like coming back to it. Or like, and coming to shows.
Yeah, I reckon, I mean, I can't play anything for love nor money, but I always imagine, you know, when you see a video of any band and they're playing, say, at a festival, and it's like everyone's singing the words back, I'm always like, that must be the most mental thing ever.
It's pretty cool.
I can't ever imagine getting bored of that.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Especially like when it's like a new song as well, you know, like when we played at the Northcote Social Club, like literally
great venue
yes, it was literally like a couple of weeks after Hey You came out, and there was people who were singing the words, and that was like the first single off the album, and there's people singing the
motherfucker
words.
Just says yeah. You mean.
And I was like, what the hell, like I don't know, I just like, and that especially because that was the first song we put out in like years, we were like, we don't know what to expect, like if this is gonna if people are gonna care or anything. So
yeah, cool. That must have been quite an interesting little time, like between the albums and getting those new tracks together. Did you guys have to have like a bit of a chat as a band and go like, all right, second album, are we all in on this? Because, you know, going back to what you said earlier about making your own luck, a part of making your own luck is like, fuck, we're actually going to have to like do some proper grafting here.
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of those conversations. And luckily everyone was all on the same page. Off the sort of like success from Lush Life, that like, I guess, like, put a fire in everyone's bellies. And, you know, I think if that album had, like, flopped, maybe we still would have made another album, but I don't think everyone would have been on the same page about it, you know?
And now you're going to North America and playing with Dust. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. I interviewed those guys not so long ago. I saw them play at the Ev before
sick.
Christmas,
yeah.
Man. Fuck me, what a band they are. So
good.
Good.
Yeah, and lovely people as well.
Yeah, yeah. I reckon that North American, that's probably like my two favourite bands since moving to Australia, you guys playing on a bill. I'm like,
maybe you should move to America.
Exactly. All right, Maisie, let's build your dream gig venue.
I'll have two pints, please. Fuck, I love this band. Get us a couple of frothies, mate. Have your dream gig, mate. The dream gig venue. Step this way.
So you can go as weird as you want with this. Can you give me the made-up name of your made-up venue, please? So you can go as weird and wonderful as you want.
Oh my god. Can I name it after myself, or is that vain?
I would absolutely just
yeah.
Just
that's actually what we call it. Not even like it's going to make no sense grammatically. It's just going to be called Maisie Everett.
With no space between first and last name, just one long word. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Love that. All right, fair enough. I love if you went, is that vain? Yeah. And then I'll just do it all in capitals.
You've got to get all out.
I'll just dial in on that. That's fine. All right, Maisie, tell me, support acts, dead or alive?
I was thinking, who's like a, what's like a band that's like notoriously really bad live? Because I think it would be, I would want to pick them. so that we look good
really
in comparison.
Really bad live. It's got to be surely like a boy band situation, like a real shit manufactured pop group, I think would be the one.
Maybe like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to, I mean, boy bands have their kind of place though. I don't want to, maybe like, I don't know. Maybe like is Red Hot Chili Peppers? Like, I feel like
are they shit live?
I could be completely wrong, but.
This is amazing. I love this. Maybe just outing Red Hot Chilies.
No shade, but I feel like.
Yeah, okay. Red Hot Chili Peppers, because they won't do a good job warming up the crowd. Sure. I love that. Next up, what is going to be your walkout song? Do you guys have one that you like?
We've done it before, and we normally just pick a random song that is like kind of funny in the moment. I think when we were in, it was so funny, when we were in. When we played in New York with Spacey Jane a few months ago, we walked onto New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down by LCD Sound System. And it was fucking so awkward because I don't think anyone knew the song because everyone was like 70.
So much good.
But also just like such like a slow, depressing, like totally not a walk-on song. But I don't know why we did it. It was terrible.
All right,
but
that. All right,
one song. We walked onto Matchbox 20 once, so maybe something by or like Rob Thomas.
Love that.
Yeah
fair
no
game.
Reason.
Something completely left field. Yeah. Nice. Okay, awesome. I also would love to have seen that in New York, just stood there in the middle of the crowd, like everyone wondering what the fuck is going on.
It was like so, the song was so good. Quiet that like, I feel like it, I think people just thought we were kind of just walking on in like silence. I don't know. It was.
Was it just like, I'm picturing like a lot of like.
Yeah, that was the vibe.
Like
yeah.
slow
yeah.
claps, like.
Yeah.
I'm real. Okay, next up. Well, we've already spoken about this, so this might be what I have in mind, but what piece of merch are you having on sale? Is it going to be the hat?
It's got to be the hat. Yeah.
Nice. Would it be an exact carbon copy of the hat, or are you like having Bel Air Lip Balm's branding on it?
Good question. Maybe like a little logo, like a carbon copy, but it's just got like a little logo on the dangly bits.
On the dangly bits.
Yeah.
Would the dangly bits be glow in the dark?
Yes, they absolutely would be.
See, you've got, I honestly, can you please make that happen?
Yeah,
it would bring me so much joy.
They're probably going to be extremely expensive to manufacture, especially if they glow in the dark, but it'll be for our rich fans.
Yeah, can we please stick to mugs and mouse mats?
Yeah.
Nice. And finally, what one rule would you have the audience have to abide to?
Maybe don't be a dickhead. It's got to be the no dickhead policy.
Nice. That's a Meredith policy. Yeah. I like that. It is good. Man, what a place Meredith is. Because you guys have played Golden Plains, which is obviously at the same site. Have you done Meredith as a punter as well?
Yeah. Such a good festival.
Man, I don't think I've ever felt more loved in my life than after a weekend at Meredith.
It's the best festival in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so good, man. Well, there you go. That is Maisie Everett, all one word. That is the Dream Gig venue. Rock on, man. Love that. Well, amazing. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
And look forward to seeing you live, man.
Sounds good. Thanks for the chat.
Alternative Down Under.
Maisie from the Bel Air Lip Balms. What an absolute legend. Very much enjoyed the Dream Gig venue there as well. Just going to name it after myself, if that's all right. It is all right, Maisie. You do you. Absolutely. That is the Dream Gig venue. It's what it's all about. And I do really want to see that hat made into merch. There's got to be a company out there that we can get behind this. But yeah, I think Maisie's right. It might actually be really expensive to make that. So the losses are probably quite bad. Because let's be real, in this day and age, that is where a lot of bands are making their money, selling merch at shows. So maybe we'll have to find someone with a lot of money who doesn't mind making the loss on that themselves. My thanks again to Maisie for that great chat. It was just so nice to have a real deep dive into that album and hear the stories behind it. And the progression, it's always interesting, progression from album one into album two. I don't know, it must be so hard because I was a big fan of Lush Life as well. I think fans, there's a bit of extra judgment that comes with a second album, I think, particularly if you are a big fan of album one. The anticipation is really high. So being the artist on the inside of that, the artist creating the album, the pressure must be pretty real. But that conversation with Alex Leahy and getting into the hard work of things and just really devoting themselves to that album is obviously paid off, because it's just an album cover to cover full of really well-crafted tunes. And yeah, as I've mentioned many, many times in this episode, an album that has been at the heart of my Christmas, my new year, the beginning of 2026. And to be honest, I think it's going to be a big part of the soundtrack across the year for me personally. So yeah, thrilled to have them on board for a chat and thrilled for them ahead of what is going to be a great year. Again, those tours coming up in February, they get things going on their Australia tour. They are playing 7 dates across Australia. Go and check out their website now. Get your tickets to bellolipbombs.com/shows. They're kicking things off on February 26th here in Melbourne at the Corner, and they've added a second date there as well, the 27th. And yeah, in March they head over to the States. So yeah, real exciting time for the band. That is it for episode 31. Fuck me, I've caught up my own age in episodes. Fuck. Episode 31 is in the can. That is it. Thanks ever so much for dropping by and sticking by with us in another year of the show. We've now been going since 2023, so shit. Across 4 years now, so thanks for being along for the journey. And yeah, plenty more big, exciting interviews coming your way. Take it easy, guys, and we'll be back with you very shortly.